Good morning. Thank you for all for being here to share the Dharma together this morning. It's a cute little table, but it's a little too far away. No, it's okay. As usual, feel free to shift your posture if you need to during the Teisho. But however you sit, do maintain a straight back and keep the head up. In the verse on the faith mind that we chant in almost every session, Sung San says, to seek great mind with thinking mind is certainly a grave mistake. Yeah. The discursive, ego-driven mind is incredibly subtle and quick. It will leap at the slightest gap in our practice and try to fill it in with thoughts and ideas about practice to distract us from the practice itself. This is natural. So we just become aware and return to the practice. It's a fine line that we walk. We can neither indulge in the mind road, nor can we try to suppress it. While our continuing, persistent, and focused practice is important, Wu Men warns us to be alert and never unclear is to wear iron chains and a yoke. Even this alertness, if we cling to it, is a sickness. What Robert Aitken called grim samadhi. And yet Wu Men also says to indulge freely without restraint is to behave like heretics and demons. Over the years, it's very easy to get stuck at some point along the path, thinking that this is it. Now I've got it. It's these stuck places that are called Zen sickness. How many times do we read of a monk who has a genuine realization, really gets it, and then the master whacks him one with his stick? Don't stop. Keep going. Back to the mat. Dogen said there's no beginning to practice, no end to enlightenment, no end to practice, no beginning to enlightenment. I once heard a Baptist preacher say that saving the soul is a continuous process. He was onto something. But there's always a risk of finding an end, a place, and camping out there. We live on constantly shifting sand. We are shadows walking among shadows, less substantial than the smoke of the incense. How do we deal with that? In the usual course of things, we deny the reality and grab, try to attach to things, notions, ideas. But of course, that doesn't work in the long run. Even in one who has practiced for a long time, these attachments persist. And as practice and realization continue, the attachments, the sicknesses, become deeper, more subtle, and harder to see and deal with. But awareness of signs and symptoms of Zen sickness, this stuckness, helps us return to our nature. And these sicknesses, these places of stuckness, can become a Dharma gate to deeper realization of our practice and of ourselves. Today we'll look at case number 11 in the Shoyo Roku, the Book of Equanimity, Yunmen's Two Sicknesses. The Shoyo Roku was originally a collection of verses by the 12th century Soto master Tian Tong Hongji. It was later taken up by Wan Song Xingxiu, who added introductions and commentaries to produce a collection similar in format to the earlier Hakugan Roku, the Blue Cliff Record. Wansong's introduction to this case reads, "A bodiless man suffers illness. A handless man compounds medicine. A mouthless man ingests it. A senseless man is well. But tell me, how do you treat a mortal disease?" Bodiless, mind and body dropped away. Handless, wu wei, not doing. Mouthless, able to speak without moving lips or tongue. Senseless, no color, sound, smell, taste, touch, or what the mind takes hold of, nor even act of sensing. All are exalted spiritual states. Why then does Wansong ask, how do you treat a mortal disease? Not only the bodiless man, but every one of these folks suffers illness. How so? Bodiless, handless, mouthless, senseless, all characteristics. All are empty. A little bit of attachment, or of has or has not, and all is lost. The moment you cling, the moment you have arrived, the moment you say, oh, this is it, body and mind dropped away, that's the moment you're lost. To attach to any condition of has or has not, sick or well, good or bad, is a sickness. The Diamond Sutra again and again denies characteristics, even the characteristics attributed to the Buddha. In chapter 20 of the Diamond Sutra, the Buddha asks, Subhuti, what do you think? Can the Tathagata be seen by his perfect physical body? Subhuti said, no, Bhagavan, the Tathagata cannot be seen by his perfect physical body. And why? The Tathagata says that the perfect physical body is not a perfect physical body. Thus it is called a perfect physical body. Subhuti, what do you think? Can the Tathagata be seen by the possession of all the distinguishing marks? Subhuti said, no, Bhagavan, the Tathagata cannot be seen by the possession of all the distinguishing marks. And why? The Tathagata says that the distinguishing marks are not distinguishing marks. Thus they are called distinguishing marks. No perfect body. No distinguishing marks. Yet they are called such, distinguishing marks, perfect body. It's okay to name things, but not to attach to them. Any notions of a metaphysical existence or non-existence are simply irrelevant. I drink tea. I just experience tea. I enjoy the tea. Is there any reason to obsess over whether it is real beyond the direct experience? How do we treat a mortal disease? Recognition. Acknowledgement. To truly realize our sickness is to be free. Not free from the sickness, but free as the sickness. We are never free of suffering, but we work to be free as the suffering. Vimalakirti was sick in his little 10-foot square hut, where he was visited by thousands of disciples, bodhisattvas, arhats, and others. He was sick because the world is sick. And he was perfectly okay with that. He is the sickness. He is the world. He is the universe. As is each one of us. In the main case, Yunmen gives us some pointers on recognition. The case reads, Great Master Yunnan said, "There are two sicknesses that prevent the light from penetrating. One sickness is where everything is unclear and something seems to hang before you. Therefore, the light does not penetrate. One sickness is that everything is void, but still you feel you're in a mist. Therefore, the light does not penetrate thoroughly." About the Dharmakaya, there are also two sicknesses. First, if you reach the Dharma, but fall and remain there, and do not extinguish your own opinion about it, that is one sickness. Second, if you think it is wrong to give up efforts after enlightenment and minutely examine your own consciousness and find there is no scar, that is a sickness. And then Tiantong added a verse. "The dense web of myriad forms is so precipitous, passing through beyond location blocks the eyes. Sweeping out his garden, who has the strength? Hidden in a person's heart, it naturally produces feelings. A boat crosses a rustic ford, wet with autumn's aquamarine, sailing into the reed flowers, shining on snow bright. With a bolt of silk, an old fisherman takes it to market. Floating in the wind, a single leaf travels on the waves." This case is a little unusual for Yunnan. We're much more used to his pithy one or two word answers coming forth like lightning. This time he exhibits a grandmotherly kindness with a teisho. Yunnan is addressing his monks, many of whom had already come a long way in realizing themselves. And yet, the master must continue to admonish them, help them recognize the sicknesses that they and all of us, no matter how long we have sat, still carry. First, he presents two sicknesses that come up in our efforts to see into the true, empty nature of things. One sickness is where everything is unclear, and something seems to hang before you. Therefore, the light does not penetrate. The light does not penetrate. What is this mysterious light that does not penetrate? In case number 86 of the Blue Cliff Record, Yunnan himself says, "Everyone has his own light, though when you try to see it, you cannot. Everything is darkness." What is everybody's light? Whether we know it or not, we live by this light. We live as this light. We are the light. In Zen, we tend to go for the gold right away. We sit regularly. We go to sesshin, work with a teacher, take up a koan. The intense nature of Zen practice can lead to an awakening experience relatively quickly. I say relatively, we're still talking about years here. But it's rather like an invading army that drives directly to the capital. There are still many pockets of resistance out there to deal with. There are still many psychological items that will come up. Yes, we have a kensho or whatever you want to call it. But there is an I who experienced it. I see tables, chairs, people. I see that. The self will interpose itself at every opportunity. Objects are still out there as opposed to in here. Those out there objects hang before you and the light does not penetrate. It does not penetrate beyond that initial experience into our lives. This is the problem with making an initial kensho the be-all, end-all of practice. Maybe you get passed on mu or some other initial koan. Wow, I'm enlightened. Why am I still acting like a jerk? Why do I still lose it? Why do I still desire all this stuff? I. In this case, one of two things will happen. You will take hold of yourself and continue to deepen your practice, or you will quit, and that one experience fades from memory, and maybe you're even worse off than before. The point of practice is practice. Results are not our concern. One sickness is that everything is void, but still you feel you're in a mist. Therefore, the light does not penetrate thoroughly. Will the light ever penetrate thoroughly? Will we ever truly be free? Even when you have clearly seen the emptiness of all the dharmas, lost all notions of self and other, there remains a tiny bit, hard to see but still there. The slightest difference is the difference between heaven and earth, says Dogen. But over years of working on koans, mindfulness, and all the rest of it, we see ourselves more clearly. Kaplan-Roshi called it a lapidary process, bumping up against koans, our fellow practitioners, and especially against our lives and ourselves. The rough edges and sharp corners are gradually worn away. This is the fourth and fifth ox herding pictures. In the third picture, we get the first glimpse of the ox. The next two pictures, capturing the ox and taming the ox, show the great struggle that ensues as the ego self tries again and again to escape back into the old ways, and it must be constantly and persistently brought back to the moment. But it takes patience. The greatest asset you can bring to this practice is boneheaded persistence. Gee, have I said that before? The Buddha practiced for 500 lifetimes as Kshanti the ascetic. Kshanti paramita is the perfection of transcendent patience and forbearance. It is this endless patience that sees us through the tough spots, the long, hard slog. And patience begets patience. Another aspect of Kshanti is acceptance of the truth. The truth of this moment. Good, bad, or indifferent. Robert Aiken mentioned that even as an old man, he took great joy in finding new points. New points. I take this to mean hitherto undiscovered pockets of resistance. Ego, self, or whatever you want to call them, and clearly seeing them and letting them be, letting them go. But also new ways of looking at things, unexpected new perspectives. There are always new points to be found. It never ends. And our lives become joyful exploration. But once we have to some extent realized the Dharmakaya, the great void, there are two more sicknesses. About the Dharmakaya, there are also two sicknesses. First, if you reach the Dharma but fall and remain there and do not extinguish your own opinion about it, that is one sickness. Yes, absolute samadhi is pretty rare. It may be a once-in-a-lifetime event. No eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, or mind. No color, sound, taste, touch, or what the mind takes hold of, nor even act of sensing. Everything comes to a halt. No thoughts whatever arise. Nothing stirs, not even the awareness that nothing stirs. But everyone comes to it to one degree or another as part of practice, particularly in an extended sitting like Zazenkai or Sesshin. But the great death is not something that you experience, because there's no person there to experience it. But when you return, or reborn, there can be a feeling of deep, deep peace and joy. And that's when it starts. It is a profound experience, And naturally one wants to think about it, talk about it, remember it, and worst of all, seek it out and try to relive it. Again and again, we have to be reminded that there is no end point. Enlightenment is not a place. It is not a goal. Any individual experience is a matter of karma. It will happen when it happens. And like all experiences, it is temporary. It will arise and pass away. No matter what you think you might have experienced, whether it be in Sesshin, after long hours of intense zazen, or a spontaneous falling away of body and mind in a totally unexpected circumstance, just go back to the practice. The practice is always welcoming, always accepting. The practice is your true home. Second, if you think it is wrong to give up efforts after enlightenment and minutely examine your own consciousness and find there is no scar, that is a sickness. To continue to examine your own consciousness, to keep looking, 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 and find nothing? No scar? No blemish? All beings, including me, are whole and complete. What a deep and abiding sickness that is. It is the self thinking about the self. No scar? No blemish? That is certainly not a human condition. Nor is it the way of the Bodhisattva. A master said, sentient beings are hindered by their understanding. Enlightening beings, i.e. Bodhisattvas, are not free from awareness. Nor should they be. Without flaws, without awareness of flaws, there's no helping of others. To think that one can end suffering, one can somehow escape, is a sickness. As one song says in his commentary, before the doctor has left the house, convulsions break out. Tiang Tong's verse. As I've often done, I'll go through it line by line and comment. The dense web of myriad forms is so precipitous. Comment. The myriad forms are as they are, whole and complete. Mountains are perfect in their height. Valleys are perfect in their depth. Just let them be. Passing through beyond location blocks the eyes. Comment. Pure Dharmakaya is blind. No eye, ear, tongue, toe, eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, or mind, and no function. No Bodhisattva. Sweeping out his garden, who has the strength? Comment. Master Kazan says, most people want to have it pure white, but sweep as you will, you cannot empty the mind. Sweeping itself leaves traces. Hidden in a person's heart, it naturally produces feelings. Comment. The deepest practice itself produces subtle feelings. From a lake that is absolutely silent and still, yet a mist arises. A boat crosses a rustic ford, wet with autumn's aquamarine. Comment. Autumn is the time of the great death, but it is also a stagnant pond. Sailing into the reed flowers, shining on snow, bright. Comment. But sail on, and there is a world of flowers, sun on snow. With a bolt of silk, an old fisherman takes it to market. Comment. He's going to try to sell water by the river or sell sand in the desert. Floating in the wind, the single leaf travels on the waves. Comment. Floating in his little leaf boat, the fisherman goes wherever the wind and waves take him. Destination is of no concern. wherever our little leaf boat of practice takes us, at whatever stage. We practice our joy. We practice our sorrows. We practice our wisdom, our foolishness, our sickness, and our wellness. We practice each and every moment, for each and every moment is Buddhadharma, whole and complete. Together with all beings, we realize the way.